Welcome to your heavenly refuge, a space to unwind your mind, slow down your rhythm, and fill your whole body up with inspiration.
Dreaming with open eyes, being in another world. Don't know what's truth or lie, all these stories that you've heard. Having difficulties to speak, because they seem so far away. It is time to be awake, got important things to say.
This podcast will nourish you with the stories from beautiful creators and entrepreneurs who have already made a change in their lives using their gifts to walk their talk. Welcome again. My name is Oyana Galordual, yoga teacher and wellness consultant, enthusiastic about bringing the stories of people who share their unique blueprints with the world. Our guest today in this full moon of October is Diane Cutler. Diane Cutler dreamt at a very young age with blessing the world. What she didn't know at that time is that she was going to end up building, taking care, and in service of a land around an ancient Buddhist goddess temple in Nepal. Now it has been 22 years she calls Nepal her main home. Building around that land, culture, and people, Crystal Earth Community. Crystal Earth Community holds the True Passion Soulwear Atelier and Handcraft Production, whose Diane is its creative force, director, founder, and designer. It holds a school which shelters more than 200 children, all of them from the poorest families of the area. It holds a medical clinic, a farm that uses permaculture for soil regeneration and growing a food forest, and a retreat space called Joy Source Resort. Diane comes to Ibiza every year since 36 years, establishing here the European base for True Passion Soulwear and being part of its colorful landscape. How are you this morning, this rainy morning, Diane?
Good morning, Oyana. Thank you for inviting me to share in your beautiful story and feeling the season changing in Ibiza, saying goodbye to summer and welcoming autumn.
Yeah, I'm so grateful you are here, Diane. I feel you have such an authentic story to share. And I would like to start the podcast today asking you about important shifting points in your life which brought you here today.
Well, my biggest, most profound shifting came when I was at 23, and my mother, to whom I was very, very connected, decided to leave her body. And her legacy to me was her request to leave my home country, Finland, and travel to India to study with Osho. And so I left on that journey, year 95, and somehow I could say that I'm still on that journey, because it brought me to Pune, to Goa, to India, and I very soon found all these amazing fabrics in India and realized that I was able to continue my passion making clothes there, and at the same time coming every summer to Ibiza. When I came with my first collection from India here, on the third day, somebody gave me keys to a shop in Calle de la Virgen, number 3, and said, wow, your clothes are amazing. If you have the courage to try, here is a shop and you can fill it up with your clothes. And so that started my first epic of having a shop in Ibiza and selling the collection. That time was called Dakini. And so these years then after in India brought me more to understand the Dakini concept. It was given to me as a name right in the beginning in a channeling. And then in my search to understand the Dakini principle, it brought me to the Dalai Lama, to the Buddhist teachings. And about 5 years later from that, I went to visit the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala, and I felt such a deep connection and blessing from him. And next thing after that, I found myself in Nepal, knowing that there was a land, a place waiting for me, and then really following the dreams, guidance by the Dalai Lama, I found to this land, actually immediately. And in this land, there was standing an ancient temple that the village people didn't really know even the age of it. It was at least 1,000 years old. And I felt such a deep connection with this temple and just knew immediately standing there that this was the place that was waiting for me. And by chance, it just happened to be that the land around the temple was for sale. And with full trust, I purchased that land and started manifesting and grounding my visions there.
So I said in your introduction that when you were a teenager or at a very young age, you had this dream to bless the world. I'd like to get a little bit deeper into that dream and how it manifested.
So actually, all my childhood, I just felt like very much connected to my past lives. And I felt like I had a mission on Earth, that I was not here to just waste my time for selfish purposes, but I would have to put my skills into service. And I did dream somehow when I was a teenager that I would end up in some small cabin in the Himalayas and where I would just sit and pray and send blessings to the earth and to all the people. And instead I found myself in the Himalayas with the tools, with my real true passion for making clothes, and saw that I was able to weave my prayers and blessings into the clothes. And then they would start to reach and go around the planet and reach people in every corners. And that became the way of sending blessings.
You mentioned that already you saw yourself in the Himalayas sending blessings. I wonder, how did you know at such a young age about the Himalayas?
So I was studying a lot of occultist ascendant masters. So I was studying about Kutumi and El Moriah and Saint Germain from young age. And they all spent time in distant, lonely places in the Himalayas. And I somehow saw myself in like that position, that would be my future. And I just knew I would end up in the mountains.
And you mentioned before that you wanted to put yourself in service. I want that you explain us deeper what service means to you.
So for me, it was always about the planet and humanity. And I remembered already in very young age being on this planet for lifetimes and lifetimes and being in service for the light, for the dream, the Atlantean dream, to rebuild a paradise on Earth. And I felt like I had so many skills and talents from young age that I was going to use my skills somehow to be in service and to take care of people and help others. And my mother taught me at a very young age to give everything away. She was a real giver. So she showed me the example of giving. And this became very much the way that I was able to be in service, was to create and give abundance, share with the people. And so when I landed to Nepal and I saw everybody so in such a poverty stage, and I felt like my knowledge and my wisdom was very useful there, and I could solve a lot of the problems of the poverty by just putting my skills into action there. So that became the way to take care of the village and raise funds by making clothes, and then those funds putting them into service of everyone.
So which were the skills you developed in your early years?
So I learned to make clothes since the age of 4. I just naturally picked up first wool and knitting, and then I think I was 10 when I got my first sewing machine, and I already started to stitch clothes for the neighbor's children. And I think I was 18 when I made my first collection. I just stitched it nighttime in my room and then went out there and sold it and knew that this was exactly what I was going to do in this life.
Which materials were you using then?
Whatever materials I could find in Finland, but my first collection was for men, funny enough, because at that time there really wasn't much clothing for men, and I just had so many visions and ideas what I could do. So I had a shop in Helsinki, and it was a collection called Unique. So every piece was unique, and they would just get a number, unique number this. And I think I was running somewhere like 1,022 numbers when I closed the shop and moved to India.
As you expressed before, your mother's departure was the shifting point that motivated you to travel to India. I have the feeling your mother was a very spiritual woman. Would you like to talk about the legacy you received from her?
Yes, she really did bring me up from very young age into understanding that this material reality was not all of the story. And she, for example, taught me how to use telepathy from the age of 4. We would like practice looking at the curtains with million leaves, and then she'd make me pick one leaf and focus on that and learn to transport that picture to her. So I had a very strong telepathic connection with her. So when she left her body, she was able to come to me and communicate with me after leaving the body and tell me very clearly that she left so that I would leave the country and move to India.
The language of dreams and the language of communication with the unseen has been something that you had kept a connection during all these years.
All my life.
And that had guided you also through your journey. In which way?
Well, I would have almost every night all my life nightly experiences, and quite often really just move out of the body and move into higher astral realms and meet with beings, and these lamas, these Rinpoches would come to my dreams and give me guidance. And so when I came to Nepal, and I just had an inner knowing that there was a land waiting for me, and I spent 7 days searching, and on the seventh day I thought, oh, maybe I'm not finding it. So I cried myself to sleep, and that night the Dalai Lama in my dream literally walked into my room, pet me in the head and said, my child, don't cry, tomorrow morning you are going to take this direction. And then in my dream I saw this one big distant tree. And so when I woke up and followed the directions, I arrived to this amazing Buddhist village with tens of Buddhist monasteries and the most beautiful surroundings. And then I was looking around and I just looked up to the west, and there was the tree, like about 3 kilometers away. And I said, that's it, there's the tree from my dream, I need to get there. And when I arrived to the tree, there was the temple at the root of the tree. So I felt like it was very much guiding me to this place. And I felt a connection. I felt the connection from previous lives. And later I came to also know that under that land there was massive crystals, that there were actually crystal caves and crystal pyramids under that land. And to those crystals I have been now a guardian for the last 22 years.
Is that the origin of the name for the community?
Yes. It became Crystal Earth because there was so much crystal to be found on the surface. And then in some of my nightly visions, I had been inside the hill in crystal caves, meeting ancient beings and being initiated to the guardianship of that temple.
I want to get more details about the expansion of this project of Crystal Earth Community. How, from a dream and from finding this Buddhist goddess temple, it expanded into a community that holds a school, an atelier, a clinic, and that gives a life to so many people.
So after finding the place and putting roots there, my feeling was that I would just put into action the teachings and the wisdom that I had learned and the principles that some of them I learned from Osho and many of them from Dalai Lama. And I just start to put them in action. So already when we moved to live there, when the first house was built, we ended up with a lot of families. And we needed to make space for them. We needed to create livelihood for them. And we were making clothes from the beginning. So it was obvious that I would need to take care of all the people. The tailors, their children, the people who ended up joining us from the Nepali family. And it was just growing and growing, like totally organically. And one after another, we needed another building to host people. We would build and grow. And suddenly in a few years, there were tens of people joined. And during these years also, I had established a children's home, seeing so many children abandoned around. And I just felt that I can. So why not?
Tell us, how is this feeling of a project growing organically?
It's a wonderful feeling. It's like trusting in the unknown, trusting that there exists a whole reality and world beyond this visible one, that there are truly beings and spirits and higher beings that we are connected to, that are guiding us, that are blessing us, if we open to share and give to others.
Did you have the feeling at any point during all these years that you were gonna lose yourself in this project?
Never. Never. It was a strong feeling of being in service and becoming a channel for abundance in a way that I was opening up, and I saw that the more I was giving and taking care of people, the more I was receiving to give. So I never wanted to stop that flow. So I just kept expanding the circle of sharing and adopting children and taking care of the elders and giving more and more. And I think just the joy of giving became like the one of the really great passions in this.
It is a good moment to talk about abundance. I see your project like a little seed that has been vibrating and spreading throughout the years in this energetic field of abundance. What did you learn about this energy?
So what I learned about abundance, it's that, first of all, it's always in the here and now. It's not something you can save for future. And it's an energy flow that flows from the passion to live. It's like passion to live extracts energy. And that creates a flow of abundance. And the more you share, the more the abundance flows. So it's not something that is just for one person. It's like a collective blessing.
Okay, so from what I understand, is as if you translate life force into material things around you and your project. Tell me more.
Yeah, you could say that way. My passion to live and to pray and to bless and join with the clothing, it creates a lot of energy. And that energy, when it's put in good use, it, of course, manifests as finance also, and that finance is guided back to the community, building school, sharing with people, feeding people, and it's just growing. The benefits are then multiplying. And this is what gives the first layer of blessing to the clothing. Mm. That everything that's done in the community, the way we create the clothes already creates well-being there.
Yes.
And then it brings energy to the clothes. And then at the end of the process of making the clothes, we also take time to really bless them, to pray upon them, to sing with the clothes and fill them with the energies of the temple, of the community, before we send them to the world. And this, I have seen these frequencies and energies really people feel.
Is there a connection between the way the clothes are weaved, prayed and chanted upon with the net of people, musicians, creatives who wear these clothes all around the globe?
Well, it's a very unique collection in a way that it comes with so many frequencies and good energy. And also they're unique. So they are dressing up people's new selves and souls. And initially, I created True Passion Soul Wear because I wanted to make clothes that I wanted to wear.
For sure.
So I didn't want to make compromises with the market, what people needed and wanted, but I wanted to create clothes that was suitable to wear in ceremony, in sacred situations, that people would feel uplifted and supported in. So, yeah, people all over the world, creators, musicians, have really taken a liking to them. And I hear so many times now in my travels, every time I meet people who have worn them, I'm shared these stories of what happened when they were wearing my clothes and how they love them and how magical things come about to their lives. So it's an ongoing history and story of the clothes really tuning in with the people and serving them.
Mm-hmm. Before getting deeper into True Passion Soul Wear, I wanted also to mention something that called my attention that you said before. You were saying that you are in service also of the Buddhist goddess temple that you have in your land, and a way of creating abundance is also through prayers and offerings to that temple. Would you tell me a little bit more about how to do that?
So this particular temple at the tree, it is one stone with ancient carvings, and so the estimate is at least 1,000 years old, and it represents a place where Guru Rinpoche, over 1,000 years ago, probably hid some treasures, what they call tertons in the Buddhist concept. And these were energetic frequencies that he placed there to be found by the right people in the right time. So in some way, I was called there to protect these frequencies and take care of the purity of that place. And that service, I believe, has opened the ancient prayers and blessings that were stored in this temple so that it may benefit the village around, the people around, and also everybody who comes into contact with the clothes that are blessed there. So now, very close to the temple, there truly is a school that serves the whole area, the poorest children of all the mountains. And it's no ordinary school. It's a beautiful, colorful, run by a Montessori style, where the children get food, they have free health care, we give them clothing, and they have a safe space to grow out of poverty. So I believe this is one of the blessings from taking care of the temple in a respectful, sacred way, that those ancient power blessings that were stored there could safely be channeled into this time.
Would you be open to teach people how to take care of temples?
Yes, and in some way I already am. Coming to Ibiza and bringing some seeds of the temple work also to Ibiza and holding retreats in Finland and here. So I have started to share these ancient wisdoms with people for some years now, and slowly, as people grow more interested in this line of work and it ripens in Europe.
Yeah, and I guess as also people are more clean within to be able to honor these energies outside of them.
Yes, and it brings to one very important point, which I've learned with the temple, is that intention is everything. Intention is so important. What your intention is at a temple, even if you don't make all the details according to some cultural system, it is more important the purity of the heart and your intention. And if one's intention is really to benefit humanity, then the temple is going to respond.
So important, the power of intention. Let's go back to the school, because also the amazing thing is that through the funds that are coming from True Passion Soulware, all this expansion of the community is being funded. And in the last years, there are also, regarding the school, and correct me if I'm saying something wrong, there are some also godparents of the children, mainly from Europe, that are contributing so these children can get an education and can be fed every day there. In the last year, you shared with me that some of the godparents stopped sending this contribution towards the school because of the economic situation of the world. So maybe some of the listeners would like to also be part of this project. So would you like to share with more detail how the school is run and how, if someone wants to contribute towards it, can do it?
Yes, until the end of last school season, we had sponsors for all the children. And then we took 35 new, small, 2 to 3 year old children into the group. And we were hoping to find them new sponsors during the summer, but instead 30 sponsors left this summer. So we ended the summer with 65 children without sponsors out of 200. And this is the first time in years that we have this imbalance. And these are really children who otherwise would not get any education. And some of them don't get food home. So the only food they get is in the school. So it is very necessary to keep these children in the school. And I hope that in the times to come, more sponsors around the world will stand up and maybe be able to support a child at a time. It is 45 euros a month, and it pays for the education, for the teacher's salaries, and for the daily food, clothing, and also health care of these children. And this is something that can really change not only their lives, but the life of the whole village area. where the poorest children who normally would end up without any education and with not many possibilities in their life now get a chance to study at least 10 years. And if they are doing very well in studies, we will definitely try to support them also for higher studies.
You shared in the website that is also a way to change the world, that for you, like, the poorest children are the one that are going to change this world.
Yes. The wealthier children, they get an education anyway. But the poorest children who otherwise would not have an education, they can really change things. And now we have no child left behind in the village. So every single child who otherwise would not get to study, they are studying in our school. And you wouldn't believe looking at them when they dressed up in their school uniform and their hairs are cut and their nails are cut and their lice are removed from the head and they just look like every other child. And they are the happiest ones, the most joyful ones, the most appreciating ones.
Yeah, so it's important to know that when people come across a piece of clothing from True Passion Soulwear or come across Diane, all these communities behind them. So we are acquiring a piece of clothing and at the same time we are supporting this,
absolutely,
this place. And also, let's come back to True Passion Soulwear. First, because it's one of the main incomes for the community. And second, because sustainable fashion has been a topic, such an important topic in many discussions for the last years. And I feel when I talk to you, I really talk about sustainability, about a way of making clothes that involves a circle, about materials that are let's say, well received by the earth, that are coming from the earth and are weaved in a really fair way. How I'd like to talk, how do you resource the materials for True Passion Soulwear?
So being and living outside Kathmandu and knowing now all the beautiful small cottage industries in Nepal, with small families weaving fabrics, I'm sourcing them from around families who weave by hand, natural materials. These days also a lot from hemp, which grows in Nepal. And so I end up with small quantities of fabrics, very unique. And then they make very unique clothes. And this has been also a wonderful, fun way of connecting with people in Nepal. So I know all kinds of weaving places and villages where the fabrics comes from, women's groups, handicaps, low cost. And it's really a joy to purchase the fabrics from them, knowing that that money also is going to good use and that those fabrics are unique and precious. And then when they eventually reach the people, there's a long story of where they came from.
Let's come back to True Passion Soulwear. Would you share with us some of the stories of the workers?
So yes, it's really a joyful environment. In my team right now, I have equally men and women. And the women are from the village. They have slowly grown up and come to learn, starting with the knitting, and some of them have become really master tailors over the time. So I have trained them all myself because I have the background of stitching and tailoring, and also I do make all the patterns and designs myself. So I'm with hands-on working with the production whenever I'm in Nepal. And one of my greatest joy there is a young girl called Sony, who she came to my community when she was 4 years old because she was very, very sick. And she then was healed and she stayed in the children's home all her childhood. And from very young age, he used to come to the showroom and touch the clothes and be like super passionate about the fabrics. And she dreamt that one day she will try on all these clothes. And then she actually grew up in the atelier and learned step by step all the processes. And now she's working as an assistant production manager. And she's like a daughter to me.
What a beautiful story.
Very beautiful.
And you mentioned you have also men working there.
Yes, I have men also. Half of the people are men. I have handicapped men. I have many tailors who are from the very lowest caste, because in Nepal, the system of caste is still in function, and they belong to the Dalit caste, which some people call untouchables. But in our community from beginning, it was very clear that we will treat everybody as equal. So the caste system is not relevant there. And we share space, we share food, we work together. And when we do community parties, then I'm serving food and drinks for the tailors. And they are dancing and enjoying. So we switch roles.
I wish to go to one of these community parties. Must be so much fun.
They're really fun, and a lot of the people are very musical. So they sing, they play different instruments, and always in the party we have a part where we just have guitars and singing around the fire.
Yeah, maybe I go to visit soonish. And also,
you're super welcome.
There is the retreat place you have, so everybody is welcome to go visit, see the atelier.
Yes, we run the place also to support the place and to create jobs. We run it as a resort and retreat place, so we have beautiful individual cabins on the hill and an amazing home cooking kitchen with a bakery. So anybody could come and book a week or a month, do private retreats or take part in our programs and enjoy the community atmosphere and the farm and being very close to the actually Nepali culture. And you have the most amazing views over the Himalayas from there, and you can literally see the sunrise behind Mount Everest.
That's so tempting. I bet that many of the listeners will be wanting to reach out to you. I will link your website and your contact in the description of the episode. And anything else you want to share before we conclude today the episode?
Well, I would like to give thanks to everyone who are dressing up in true passion all over the world. My friends here in Ibiza and people that I don't know, and just pass that message to everyone that they remember that they are part of the community when they dress up with these clothes, and there is a blessing for everyone in them, and they can wear them with really pure conscience, knowing that these clothes are made in a way that people benefit. And like I said before, that there is only good karma.
Thank you so much, Diane, for sharing yourself in this way, in the podcast. I'm super grateful to have the chance in the last days to meet you deeper.
Thank you for the opening, and thanks for your audience. And my blessings to everyone. Aho.
If you are enjoying this podcast, please share it with friends. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple. And on both platforms, you can leave us up to a 5-star review. If you'd like to contact me, check the description of the episode to access my details. I would be super happy to hear from you. Here, just open your eyes.
the greatest thing I could give you is the opportunity to love yourself. How could you ever love someone if you don't love yourself? The greatest relationship you'll ever have is one with you and the universe. How could you ever love someone if you don't love yourself?
To the beauty inside.